Welcome to the Mastering Blood Sugar Podcast.
This is episode number 19 with diabetes researcher Dr. Sarah Hallberg.
My name is Dr. Brian Moll, the diabetes coach, certified and master licensed diabetes educator, and IFM certified functional medicine practitioner. Each week on the Mastering Blood Sugar Podcast, I bring you an inspiring health or lifestyle expert to help you learn to boost your metabolism, lose weight, and master your blood sugar with natural drug-free strategies. Thanks for being here with me today, and let's get started.
Hi, my interview today is with physician and diabetes researcher, Dr. Sarah Hallberg. Dr. Sarah Hallberg is the medical director at Virta Health. As a physician and exercise physiologist with a passion for helping people to be healthy through diet and exercise, she's responsible for providing medical supervision to Virta's expert team of physicians and oversees clinical strategy for Virta clinic participants. Before joining Virta, Dr. Hallberg founded Indiana University's Arnett's Medically Supervised Weight Loss Program, where she still serves as medical director. Her clinic served as the host for Virta's clinical trial. She's also an adjunct clinical assistant professor of medicine at Indiana University School of Medicine, and she previously served as an internal medicine physician at Indiana University Health for 6 years. An expert on metabolic control and type 2 diabetes, Dr. Hallberg is also the executive director of the Nutrition Coalition, a nonprofit organization that aims to educate the public and policymakers about the need to strengthen national nutrition policy so that it's founded upon a comprehensive body of conclusive science, and where that science is absent, to encourage additional research. All right, if you're new to the Mastering Blood Sugar Podcast, I want to thank you for tuning in and checking it out. If you haven't yet subscribed, go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and make sure you don't miss any of the episodes. And I'd really love if you could leave me a 5-star review and a comment like this one that I got from Thankful Mimi. It says, "Love these podcasts. What a wonderful resource for those of us struggling with blood sugar dysregulation. I've learned so much from these podcasts. Each one has been excellent, giving practical ways to understand and improve my blood sugars. Each time I listen, I'm motivated to stay the course with my diet and not give up. Thank you, Dr. Moll." All right, great. Thank you, Thankful Mimi. And if that's you, send us an email to admin@sweetlifecenters, and we're going to send you out a copy of the Best of the Diabetes Summit on flash drive as a special thank you. Guys, if you like the podcast as much as she does, leave me a 5-star review and a comment. If I read that on the podcast, we'll send you a copy of the Best of the Diabetes Summit as well. All right, let's get started with physician and diabetes researcher, Dr. Sarah Hallberg. All right, everybody, welcome back here. And I have with me a guest who I am very, very excited to interview, someone that I've been trying to interview for a while. Very, very busy lady, and who's doing some incredible work. Most of you have probably heard of her. If not, you are going to be very impressed today, and you're going to want to do some research on the work that she's doing. And that is Dr. Sarah Hallberg, who is doing some great research out at Indiana University with the Virta Health System. So, Sarah, welcome to the forum here in the podcast. It's great to have you with me.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be with you today.
All right, excellent. So, let's just dive right in. And you've been really doing some great work there. I've talked about this for a long time, and I think that there's a lot of people who have sort of come to the same realization and who are trying to change things, but that is that our healthcare system is really, the way it's been designed, is ill-equipped, I think, to handle chronic health conditions, and diabetes to me, type 2 diabetes is really the pinnacle of that. You know, I look at type 2 diabetes as kind of the pinnacle of metabolic disaster. And, you know, we need, the way I look at our current healthcare system is it's really designed to handle, one-off things. You know, it's, you come in, the average primary care physician, you know, might be managing a couple thousand patients. So, you know, they're going to try to solve whatever they can while that person's in the office and move on to the next person. And diabetes just doesn't work that way. You know, we need some continuity of care, and we need to sort of get in the trenches with these folks and help them. And I think you've devised or helped to devise a system that's doing that. So would you mind talking a little bit about Virta and what you guys are doing over there?
Absolutely. So you're absolutely right about the way that the healthcare system is set up and as far as it dealing with chronic diseases. I mean, we have a healthcare system that is set up to put out fires, right? And not to push prevention in any way, shape, or form. I mean, that's how physicians and health systems are incentivized. And we are looking only at, you know, who's making the most money. And in that, we lose sight of who is potentially saving the most money. And with healthcare expenditures run amok, I mean, at this point, we have to start looking at who is saving the most money. And so, yes, diabetes and metabolic disease is a perfect example of what happens when you have a system focus on, again, you know, putting out fires rather than prevention. And what I really like to say is when we talk about the diabetes and metabolic disease epidemic, you know, we have talked about it in utilized terms like emergent, urgent, unprecedented. And I'm going to introduce a new term that we really need to put into the lingo, and that's panic. So we've known for several years that among adults in this country, over 50% have diabetes or prediabetes. But you know, there was a new paper looking at, all right, what about metabolic disease in general that was just published? And what it found is, I mean, unbelievable results. And that is there's only about 10% of the population of adults in this country who are considered truly metabolically healthy. So newsflash, that's 90% of the people who aren't. And that's beyond urgent. That's beyond emergent. You know, that's beyond unprecedented. This is the time that we need to start panicking. And I've said it before, but it bears repeating in that if we had results like this with any infectious disease, you know, what would be happening in the country? You know, we would be panicking. We would be giving it its right place as far as our priorities within our country. And of course, we know it's not just this country, within the globe. This is something that we have to do something about today. But because it's metabolic disease, because it's something that's going to be impacting the lives of people and therefore the expenditures, you know, in the future. I mean, obviously the expenditures are hitting us now from people who have had problems in the past, but the worse we get, the more the expenditures are going to build. And so we cannot put this off any longer. The panic needs to be appropriately addressed to this here and now, unbelievably out of control issue.
Yeah, you're totally right. And the good news is that there are some real solutions, you know, and it's sad almost that more people don't know about these solutions. And that's, you know, why I'm doing this. And I know that's probably one of the things that motivates you to go out and speak and share this message and put up YouTube videos and do everything you can to spread this message as well. But you know, so far it's spreading, but it hasn't penetrated into the mass of the population of people with diabetes yet. But you know, that's what we have to keep doing. So I know that you've I think you've created a system that has an answer. Maybe not for every single person, but for certainly a large percentage of people, the results you're getting are incredible. So. Would you mind maybe talking a little bit about the details of the model that you use?
Absolutely. So really the model that we're using, and well, let me even back up a little bit before that, is why has this not you know, hit the mainstream, so to speak, and what's holding it back. And I think it's really all centered on this word reversal, because that makes everybody in the medical community a little bit, you know, nervous and scared. Like, a reversal, you can't reverse disease. Well, you can't with the standard of care model that we've been, you know, pushing for decades now. But reversal of disease is possible. I mean, and this has been shown in a number of studies in the medical literature. And so what we need to do is we need to start getting comfortable with this word, you know, disease reversal. And, you know, so if one thing I always say, if there's one thing I could get out, it's for providers and for patients both to understand that this is a word that needs to come into our medical vocabulary. We need to be talking about it. We need to be educating ourselves as both, you know, consumers from a patient standpoint and providers to, what does this word mean? What is it applicable to? And what do I need to know to make sure that me as a patient or me as a provider are communicating properly with my patients to discuss this as something that can be a goal? And so Vert Health really falls into a totally different category. We are not a diabetes management company. Okay, I mean, the management companies are everywhere, right? I mean, you know, you Google diabetes app and there are just hundreds of diabetes management apps. We fall into a totally separate category. We are a diabetes reversal program, and that is our goal. So again, you know, new category, which is necessary in this, again, panic mode that we need to be in. We have to start looking at this. We can't just manage 90% of the population. We need to set the goal at reversal. And that is exactly what Virta Health is doing. And we're really falling into a niche of something that hasn't been available before, but is critical if we're going to get a hold of this.
Yeah, totally agree. And I like the way I've heard you describe reversal before as backing people out of, you know, diabetes, backing people out of the situation that they find themselves in. And I think that's a great way to look at it. And, you know, that is really what you're doing when you're reversing, is backing yourself out of wherever you are. And I think that can be done. I mean, we look at liver disease, and certainly, you know, unless there's, you know, serious, you know, cirrhotic changes, then we know that liver disease can be reversed. And there's other diseases that we're, you know, are commonly accepted that can be reversed. And I think that we need to start looking at certainly pre-diabetes and even, you know, many cases of type 2 diabetes in the same way.
Absolutely, we do. And, you know, again, really, one of the things going back to the term reversal that makes people nervous is that they say, well, you're not curing anyone. And that, no, and I don't know that anybody, you know, is claiming that. I mean, I suppose there are some people out there, but curing means that the disease isn't going to come back, right? Reversing is the most appropriate terminology for exactly what we're doing, because it's been widely accepted for decades now that once someone gets on the road or the path of type 2 diabetes, it is a one-way street. You are going to progress, you are going to continue to get worse, and those facts are absolutely true with standard of care management. But again, if we start hitting the root cause of the problem, the underlying insulin resistance with type 2 diabetes, and again, removing what is causing the disease problem, which is glucose and insulin elevation, then we can truly turn the one-way street into a two-way street, flip a U-turn, and start to pull back. And again, that's why I think that the terminology is so incredibly appropriate for this. You know, again, with standard of care management, the way that it's historically been, the only goal, there's no goals of getting off the one-way path. We try to put the brakes on at least temporarily with maybe medical management, okay? But it's just that, it's a temporary break. And unfortunately with medical management, that temporary break is often followed by acceleration, right? Once we, you know, put the temporary brake on, right, we maybe we're making the blood sugars better with insulin, but then the weight gain goes on And we wind up accelerating the disease process actually at the end of the day. And we have to stop with that mindset. We have to start again, flipping that U-turn when it comes to this disease.
Yeah, I love that. Great way to explain that. So how do we do that? In practice, what are the most important elements of putting somebody through a diabetes reversal program?
Well, again, there are three clinically proven ways to reverse type 2 diabetes. Okay. And one of them is surgery. There's a really robust literature on that. Another is extreme calorie restriction. There is evidence of that, although the long-term evidence for this is lacking. And then there's carbohydrate restriction. And we have a reasonable amount of long-term evidence in that. And we are, currently continuing to produce more long-term evidence. In fact, we are going to be publishing our 2-year clinical trial results. And so, who is supposed to choose which path of reversal they would like to embark on? If in fact they do choose reversal. I mean, I think that many people will choose reversal, but it's going to come with effort, no matter which of those three paths you're going to embark on. And quite frankly, the only person who should be choosing between the three is the patient themselves. No one should be saying that's an absolute one or an absolute other. And that's why the education of providers is so critical, so that we can make sure that a really good discussion is had with patients. We at Virta believe, I think very fairly, that many people will choose carbohydrate restriction. Why? Because it doesn't need surgery, doesn't require surgery. It doesn't require calorie restriction. Patients do seem to naturally pull back on their calories when eating low carbohydrate nutrition, because fat is so satiating, but it's not something that you have to worry about. It's not something where you're counting your calories all the time and trying to stay under some maximum. And it requires not more medication, but in fact, less medication. Again, what do we need? We need continued results with long-term success, which we're about to add to. And then again, we'll be adding even more as our clinical trial is going to go out to 5 years. But carbohydrate restriction, you can say carbohydrate restriction, and some people can be absolutely successful with just, a very brief education session. But that is the exception, not the rule. And so the big question is, how do you make sure that you're providing support to people who are working towards disease reversal utilizing carbohydrate restriction? And that's what we think at Virta Health we have a real leg up on. Because with our remote care model, we're able to bring people many different layers of support and bring it to them on their schedule, based on their needs at the moment. And so we're providing a health coach for each patient. And that health coach patient interaction and engagement is incredibly high. So this is a high touch model, because support needs to be high touch. If a lifestyle change was easy, everybody would do it. Okay, it's hard, and there are challenges, and people need to be supported through all phases of those challenges. In addition, because safety is an important concern, especially when you have someone with type 2 diabetes who enters into a lifestyle change on a lot of different medications, each participant in the Virta treatment also has their own physician. So that they can almost in real time be making safe medication adjustments. And by medication adjustments, I mean, when you say medication adjustments to, the medical community at large, what does that mean? It means writing another script, right? And I'll tell you, I've been there, done that, because I spent almost a decade in primary care. And then, I always say I was a legal drug dealer, just writing more and more scripts. And what my specialty is right now is a D prescriber. And so the physician gets to come in, how great is that job, and come in and help patients wean off of their medications safely. And so again, the safety built in with the physician oversight, you've got the health coach there for support. We also provide patients with an incredible community support system, resources galore. And so again, it's not supporting patients from one angle, okay? Because nobody's life is like one single thing, right? We have so many different aspects of our day-to-day lives. And if we're gonna make successful and sustainable lifestyle changes, we need to make sure that the support is coming from all over so that every part of our day-to-day lives can be supported and not just presume again that one way will fix it.
Yeah, perfect. Makes total sense. So I want to get into this low carbohydrate or carbohydrate restriction, nutritional ketosis approach a little bit more. But before I do that, I just want to ask a question. And this really isn't my question, but I know it's going to be on other people's minds. You listed several ways of reversing diabetes, including bariatric surgery and severe calorie restriction, the work of Roy Taylor at Newcastle University, and then you mentioned the carbohydrate restriction model. So a lot of people are thinking, well, what about plant-based diets? I heard that plant-based diets can reverse diabetes too, and there's a book about that and all this. What does the literature say about that? And you know, what have you come to realize in that area?
I mean, you know, you can do, first of all, a couple of things. You can do a plant-based carbohydrate restricted diet, okay? And we help people who choose to eat plant-based do this on a regular basis. But the typical way that plant-based has been implemented before is as extremely low-fat diet, which therefore is very high carbohydrate. And when you really look at the literature for this, you know, there is scant evidence that this can be successful. And in any trial that does show some reduction in hemoglobin A1C, what you see is that there's, you know, extreme calorie restriction, right? There's a lot of calorie restriction going on. So it does fall in that way, you know, to one of the ways of diabetes reversal. But again, it appears that calorie restriction is needed both for improvements in glucose control, and also actually improvements in most of the cardiovascular risk factors. Because when we don't have a calorie restriction involved, one of the things that typically happens, especially with any form of a very low-fat diet, is that we see a worsening of atherogenic dyslipidemia, right? We see triglycerides go up, we see HDL cholesterol go down, we even see the size distribution of the particles themselves shift into a more problematic pattern. And so plant-based can fall into two of the categories of diabetes reversal. It can be implemented as a low carbohydrate approach, and it can be implemented as an extreme calorie restriction approach. But as far as plant-based without one of those two things, there's not the evidence for that in the literature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I found as well. I mean, people will improve their blood sugar, but not get to the point of diabetes reversal and eliminating medications. And I haven't seen any studies on plant-based diet that show people eliminating medications like your studies. And there's been other studies on low-carb diets that have shown that as well. So that's pretty powerful.
On plant-based diets, there are some medication reductions, but once again, okay, fall into that calorie restriction reversal.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for clarifying that. All right. So let's talk about nutritional ketosis and carbohydrate restriction in general. So I know that you use a nutritional ketosis approach in your program, or at least in your study. In your studies. And I know that from listening to you that at least a good part of that reason is that you don't have to worry about food logs. And from compliance reasons, you can look at blood levels of ketones and know whether a person's on track or not. But aside from that, do you think is there something special about being in nutritional ketosis versus being sort of right on the edge of that, but still following a very low carbohydrate diet that makes the results all that much better?
So it sure appears to be. And I think that the evidence is mounting and, you know, we'll see a lot more evidence probably coming out within the next 12 months on the fact that beta-hydroxybutyrate appears to be a really potent anti-inflammatory agent. And, you know, as we know about almost all chronic diseases, if not absolutely every single one of them, is that inflammation plays a key component. I mean, take cardiovascular disease, right? I mean, forever we've thought of this as just a cholesterol problem. But, you know, one thing that is really important for everyone to know is that in the pathophysiology of the development of cardiovascular disease, what is like mandatory every step of the way? Inflammation. It is an inflammatory disease. And so yes, if someone is restricting carbohydrates and not in nutritional ketosis, especially if their type 2 diabetes is early on, can they be successful in reversal? And the answer is yes. I mean, we definitely have evidence of that. But are we really hitting the whole disease when we enter into the idea of the anti-inflammatory properties of beta-hydroxybutyrate? And I'll also add to that, the fact of the matter is when we become fat burners, right, when we literally switch our metabolism, which is exactly what's happening when you have elevated beta-hydroxybutyrate levels, then what you're saying is I am switching from being a carbohydrate-based metabolism to a fat-based metabolism. We also know that people get a lot less cravings, right? They're just not hungry all the time. And so that is playing, again, when we look at the role of sustainability, you know, that is likely a major factor in the sustainability aspect of this as well.
So there are several ways that I've seen this model taught, and there's some disagreement about how you distribute the other two macronutrients, being protein and fat. Do you have sort of a recommendation there? I mean, do you recommend a high-fat diet? It's always going to be, of course, relatively high if you're reducing carbohydrates. But do you recommend, you know, 80, 85% fat in the diet, or, you know, somewhere up in that range, 75%? Or do you personalize that per patient? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we definitely personalize it. And we don't really like to try to talk percentages. I know that that's kind of, it's enticing to do it.
Right.
But we try to stay away from that. And so the way that we instruct patients at the beginning, and then of course, critical is the personalization aspect, which I'll come back to in a minute. But, you know, how much fat that they're getting and at what percentage of their intake is going to depend on what part of the journey they're on. So initially, we give patients the recommendation of restricting total carbohydrates under 30 grams a day, and we weight base the protein recommendations. So, and we're looking for moderate protein, okay, or what we like to say is adequate protein. And why? Why not high protein? Not high protein because protein, again, with the goal of nutritional ketosis, can push people out of nutritional ketosis. So we want to make sure that patients are getting enough protein so that they can sustain their muscle mass, but they don't need any more than that. Okay, so we're setting a limit on total carbohydrates. We're making a personalized recommendation on protein based on their weight and gender. And then they need to have more food in order to feel full. And what is the fill-in? The fill-in is fat, okay? And initially, that may actually be a lower percentage of total because some of the fat that they need, especially to make ketones, is coming from the stored fat as well. But of course, once they are weight stable, so later down the disease process, actually, the percentage of fat in their diet is likely to increase, and in some cases, pretty significantly, because that fat that they need for energy that they're making the ketones out of is coming much more from the fat that they're consuming rather than the fat that they're storing. Again, once they hit that weight stability. And so that's why we try to stay away, again, from a specific, you know, fat level. And we talk about fat to satiety. And one of the things that we talk about also is that fat is not free. You know, can you, even though fat is our macronutrient we want to be consuming the most of, does it mean, you know, you can have as much fat as possible? And the answer is no. You know, I mean, that is, you need to be careful that you're not consuming more than you need to get full. You know, it's easy to take in 1,200 calories of fat, you know, before 6 a.m. in coffee if you really wanted to, right? But if you're doing that, did you need all that fat to get full? Most certainly you did not, right? And so we have to make sure, again, this comes with the personalization. You know, fat is our macronutrient of focus because it does not cause glucose and insulin to rise. But we only want to be consuming it to satiety, not more. It is possible to consume fat more than what you need. And in that case, we can run into problems.
So how do you help people figure out, you know, what that level of, I'm hesitant even to say calories because, you know, I don't want people to think we're calorie counting necessarily, but, you know, how do you help people figure out what their level of food intake is so that they're in that sort of energy deficient state they can burn their own body fat?
So that's where our wonderful health coaches come in. And that's where those biomarkers, including the ketones, are critical to personalization. So a health coach will get a glucose reading and a ketone reading and a weight reading on a patient, and they'll be able to utilize all of those biomarkers to personalize, again, in almost real time. So for example, if you are working on carbohydrate restriction and you go in to see your physician and then go back to see them a month later and you've lost 5 pounds, because of what? Right? Or if you gain 2 pounds, because of what? What meal, what did it that month? When the glucose, the ketones, the weight come in, you know, we can say, what was the last meal? Right? Let's troubleshoot this right now. Things went really well. What can be replicated? Hey, we went up and you went out to a new restaurant last night. Let's go through that really carefully. Something didn't agree with you. And so again, that personalization for long-term success is really key.
Yeah, that's huge. What else do the health coaches do to help people become more successful through the program?
Our health coaches are amazing. And they help people with the education and then with a key here, which is personalization. And so, you know, our biomarkers that patients are putting in the app, we're paying attention to those. I mean, we're really honed in on those because they are the key to personalization. I mean, number one, physicians use them to, again, safely de-prescribe medication. But most important is the health coach is using those biomarkers in almost real time to help guide people. And this makes the carbohydrate restriction successful, but also sustainable. So for example, if you go into your physician's office and you're working on carbohydrate restriction and you see them and then a month later you see them again, and let's say you were successful and you lost 5 pounds. Why? What happened? You know, what went well that month that helped you with those 5 pounds? Or the flip side, what if you gained a couple of pounds? What didn't go as well? It's hard, you know, we can't pin that down to a specific time, or it's very, very difficult to do. And in order to do that at all, you've got to have people journaling, which is, again, something that enters in a whole layer of complexity that's not necessary. Whereas when we get the biomarkers, the health coach can say, hey, you know, glucose went down, ketones went up. What did you do for dinner last night? It went really well. Let's try to incorporate that in some other aspects of your meal plans. Or if it didn't go so well, oh, you went out to a new restaurant last night and you had this that was low carbohydrate. Let's go through there. There were somewhere hidden carbs. Let's troubleshoot this together. And then it can really be an impact also for planning ahead. You know, hey, I've got a work party pitching. What can I bring? What can I say to my coworkers and encourage them to help me out with this? You know, we have a family celebration that's really important to me. What do I do? Here's the things that typically will be there. And so that, again, you can't say, well, that falls into recommendation category A, and then give the same advice to everybody, right? Because what do they do for a living? How many people are at the kitchen? You know, what's their relationship with these people? Those are personalized aspects that you need to be able to know to truly advise someone and advise that particular person.
Yeah, that's why the coaching model is so vital. And as we were talking about earlier, when you compare that to the standard practice and conventional recommendations that are made, it's, you know, checking in with your doctor a few times a year. Maybe you go to a dietitian a couple of times who teaches, unfortunately, outdated and I think, inaccurate information. And then maybe you go to a diabetes education class, but, you know, they're teaching sort of just basic diabetes management. And as you said, what you're doing is not diabetes management. It has a completely different goal. And you're looking for a completely different outcome, which is really the reversal of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, which is so vital. So, you know, when I look at this, you're doing incredible things, and you're growing exponentially. I think the research you're putting out there is phenomenal into the scientific community to actually create an evidence base for this model. But you know, then we look at, you know, how big of a problem diabetes is. And again, you talked about this earlier, 50% of our population with prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, 90% with metabolic issues. That's just here in the U.S. You know, globally, China, India, and pretty much every developed nation, diabetes is exploding. So I guess the question is this scalable, and is there a way to start to shift the way that diabetes care is practiced or the way that we're taking care of people with prediabetes and type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We have a global crisis. This isn't just an America problem. This is a global crisis. And Virta's company mission is very clear. Our goal is to reverse 100 million cases of type 2 diabetes by the year 2025. Which means we're going to head out of the US at some point. And we think that the remote care model is going to be the absolute, you know, number one part of this successful scalability of this. So, I mean, we're already incredibly rapidly scaling. But once again, the idea of being able to bring, you know, care to patients at their schedule and support that can be around them even when they're not in the doctor's office, right? When they're at the work party, when they're at, these are the things that are going to make this successful across cultures. And again, be able to keep the personalization piece in there. And if we don't have that personalization, it's so central. It's like the skeleton of it, but it can be applied again across cultures and across ethnicities. And so that, I think, is going to be what is going to be the key to successful scalability around the globe.
I love it. I love it. So we're getting close to wrapping up here, and I want to ask you three questions I ask all of my guests in just a minute. But before I do that, I'd love for you to share maybe a little bit about how people can find out more about Virta. And then I know you have some studies that are being published and or getting ready to be published or certainly that you're wrapping up now. So if you wouldn't mind sharing some of that as well, I'd love for people to be able to find more information.
Sure. Information, it can be at virtahealth.com. And if your employer is not one of the employers that we are contracted with to bring Virta Health to their employees at for free or low cost, talk to your HR department. Encourage them to look us up. We'd be happy to come and talk to them about how we can successfully reverse type 2 diabetes as a team. And as far as additional studies going, yes, we just had a paper published on the patient-reported sleep outcomes in our clinical trial, an area that hasn't really been looked at. But as we all know, sleep is critical for health. So we're pretty excited about that. And we're expecting our paper on liver disease to be publishing any day now. So keep an eye out for that, because again, liver disease, as you already mentioned, one of those things that can be reversed if caught early. And we've got some remarkable results on how we were able to do that and improve, again, the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease in our participants.
Yeah, such a strong link between non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and type 2 diabetes and pre-diabetes. And again, fits into this metabolic spectrum of problems. So that's important work. And, you know, it's amazing with the same model of practice that you're seeing incredible results with sleep, liver health, pre-diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and who knows what else. So this is really exciting, really exciting stuff. So, okay. So the first question is there a thought or an idea or maybe a favorite quote that you have that kind of best summarizes your work or that you want to kind of leave people with today that kind of characterizes what you're doing?
Diabetes reversal is possible. And it's the responsibility of every person and every provider to understand that and be educated in it so that decision-making can be had in a team-based effort, patients and their providers discussing all the options and keeping reversal as an option for anyone who chooses to go down that route.
Beautiful. Love that. What a great vision. Next question is, I'm an avid reader. I love books and I think books change people's lives. And so I'm curious, is there a book for you that you read that you feel like changed your life or perhaps changed the direction of the way you practice or the things that you teach or the way you think?
Yeah. So I think that of all the ones that I've read is actually one that I was a little late to the game reading, which was Man's Search for Meaning. And I think that I really like that book and it hit home in that, you know, we all have a purpose here and it's, you know, how can you make the most of it? And mine is as a patient advocate, and that's what gets me up every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know you, you really put yourself out there and you take some arrows for a lot of other physicians and other advocates who want to push this message to help as many people as possible. And, you know, because of your position, I think, unfortunately you probably have to get up and put some shields on every day. But I know that you're really appreciated for that. Exactly. Okay. Last question, and this will sort of be a slam dunk right in your wheelhouse today. But if someone came to you, a friend or family member, you know, maybe somebody, you know, personally close to you and was just diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and you just had a minute to share sort of your best advice for them, what would you tell them to do?
I would tell them, you know, carbohydrates are, again, at the root cause of diabetes. They are what cause blood sugar and insulin to rise. So if you want to get physiology on your side and make reversal of the disease possible, you need to pull back on the carbohydrates and you need to start consuming the one macronutrient that won't cause insulin and glucose to rise, and that's fat. In a nutshell.
Yep, that's exactly right, in a nutshell. Pun intended, I'm sure. Okay, excellent. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for being here with us. Dr. Sarah Hallberg, vertahealth.com. Check her out. And there's some great blogs there, by the way. Sarah's written some, and a lot of the other people involved with Virta have written great articles over there. So you can learn a lot, videos and all sorts of resources. And watch out for those studies. So Sarah, thanks for taking the time to do this. I'm glad we finally got it done. And everybody go check out Dr. Sarah Hallberg. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks so much.
All right. And thank you for watching and subscribing to this podcast, being here with me today. I'll be back next week with another expert interview. Take care. All right, guys, what an awesome interview. I hope you really enjoyed that one with Dr. Sarah Hallberg. She's really an all-star in the low-carb and ketogenic diet communities. And I just want to remind you, if you enjoy the Mastering Blood Sugar podcast, I do ask you to just subscribe over the iTunes page. Go check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/sweetlifecenters, where you can see some clips from the videos of these interviews. I think you'll really enjoy those. And make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. Share this episode with a friend or a family member who you know could benefit from listening to it. And lastly, if you want to learn more about what I do, check out drmole.com. That's my website. You can get some free information there, including my blood sugar manifesto, which is a free download you can pick up at the website, as well as the full show notes and transcripts of all these interview podcasts. So check that out at drmole.com. All right, everyone. Again, thank you for listening to the Mastering Blood Sugar podcast. It's Dr. Brian Mole, the diabetes coach. I'll see you back next time. And remember to keep climbing and to never give up.